If you want to open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 8, that's where we'll spend most of our time this morning. It's always nice to have visitors, but it's also great to look out and see those who are here time after time again, who've devoted this time to worship and who have brought their God-given talents to spend time with one another and encourage one another. And it's so great to look out and see so many faces. I do want to thank those who have already led parts of worship this morning for the prayers and for thoughts at the table and for the reading. Nathan had some idea of what my lesson was going to be like this morning or be about this morning, but I'm not sure he realized how well some of his songs really do tie in with what we will be talking about. So like I said, if you want to open up to Matthew chapter 8, that's where we'll be looking at today. Steve mentioned at the table, he talked about things that are unclean. And so we're going to start here with Jesus who cleanses the leper in Matthew 8 in the first four verses. We see here that as Jesus came down from the mountain, there was a great crowd that was following Jesus. And a leper approaches Jesus, and he kneels down. He shows his respect to who Jesus was by kneeling down before him. And he says, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." Jesus had his faith in, or I'm sorry, the leper had his faith in Jesus' ability to make him clean, to heal him. And of course, at the time, a leper would have had the way that they were treated was that they were often removed, but if they were going to be around, they should announce themselves so that those who were clean would not be approached by someone who was diseased or unclean. Jesus touches him with his hand. He reaches out to this diseased leper and touches him with his hand, and he speaks, and he says, "I will be clean." We know that even today, but especially at that time, their idea was that something that is unclean is not made clean by being touched by something that's clean. Something that's clean is made unclean by touching something that is unclean. So by Jesus reaching out his hand, having compassion on this leper, touching him, and then speaking, "I will be clean." Because of his faith in Jesus, and because of Jesus' compassion on him, the leper was made clean. In the same way, as Steve was speaking, Jesus has made us clean by giving his life for something that was dirty and sinful. And as we often say, washed us white as snow because of his suffering on the cross for us. The next section is about a centurion and his faith. And again, the centurion approaches Jesus. But he wasn't, even though he recognized what Jesus could do, he wasn't asking for something for himself. He was asking for someone else. He had a servant, it says, is lying paralyzed at home, suffering terribly. And Jesus tells him, "I'll come and heal him." But what's the centurion's response? He says, "I'm not worthy for you to come into my house." Again, recognizing, showing that respect of who Jesus was and what he could do. I'm not worthy for you to do that. And then he goes on to talk about his role and what authority he had and how if I speak, someone will do it. And I know, Jesus, that if you speak, it will be done as well. And I do not think that in any way this is the centurion saying, do you know who I am? Do you know what authority I have? But instead, he's recognizing that if I, even I, have the power and authority to speak and it gets done, you, Jesus, who's so much greater than I am, can speak and it will be done. We will talk a little bit about how the different ways that Jesus performs these miracles. Some he's close enough to touch someone and he speaks. Some he just speaks. Some he's far enough away and he speaks and the miracle is done through his power. Jesus marveled at this man. And he said, I have found no one in Israel that has had such faith. To a Jew, that would have been a very offensive comment. They were the chosen ones. And for someone to say that a Roman centurion had more faith than the special Jews would have been offensive. But Jesus is recognizing that these people of Israel have had so much. In a way, they've had a pretty good head start on everyone else, and yet this centurion has more faith than the people of Israel. In verse 11, it says, when Jesus is speaking, it says, I tell you, many will come from east and west and recline at table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. Three men who are very important to the Israelites, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Jesus is talking about many will come from east and west. It's not just the Jews, but they will recline at table in the kingdom of heaven. And it says that the servant was healed at that very moment. Go, let it be done for you as you have believed. And the servant was healed at that very moment. Verses 14 through 17 of Matthew 8 says, Jesus heals many. He goes into the home of Peter, and he recognizes that Peter's mother-in-law is sick. She has a fever, and Jesus touches her, and the fever left her. So that she was restored in such a way that she rose and began to serve Jesus. And many were brought to Jesus after that. Many who were oppressed with demons, and he cast out the spirits with a word, healed all who were sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah, Isaiah chapter 53. He took our illnesses and he bore our diseases. Again, notice some of the different ways that Jesus heals and performs these miracles. He touches, he speaks, he's close, he's at a distance, but none of that limited what Jesus was able to do. Verses 23 through 27, we have Jesus with his disciples, and they get into a boat to go to the other side. And then a storm began. And the waves are getting higher, and Jesus sleeps. He has that peace that allows him to sleep. But we can only imagine that the people on the other boat are starting to look around. They may notice that the levels of water in the boat are a little bit higher than they were maybe 5 minutes ago, and they probably are going to be higher in five more minutes. The waves are getting bigger and tossing them more. Maybe the clouds are getting darker. And they're nervous. They're anxious. They're worried. And they go to Jesus and they wake him up and they say, "Save us, Lord. We are perishing." Jesus, peacefully sleeping. I heard someone talking the other day that, I believe it was his grandmother passed away and he's at the funeral. And someone, of course, comes up and says, "I'm sorry for your loss." And there's nothing wrong with that, but he said, the person after them said, "Something's not lost if you know where it is." So he began to reflect on the life that his grandmother had lived, and so he found comfort in those comments. Something's not lost if you know where it is. It may not be near to you, but it's not lost if you know where it is. In the same way, Jesus is peaceful and sleeping because he knows what the outcome is. He doesn't need to worry about how high the water and the waves and the storms are. He knows, and he's confident in that. The leper and the centurion came to Jesus because of their faith, but here is Jesus surrounded by his own disciples, and they're scared. And Jesus questions them, understandably, "Why are you afraid, O you of little faith? You know me. You've been with me. We were just on the other side. Where is your faith? Why don't you have the faith of the leper and the centurion?" So Jesus, when he gets up, depending on the different gospels that you're reading, but he just says, "Peace, be still." And he speaks, and the water becomes, instead of stormy and tossing them about, it becomes calm. And the peace is not just with Jesus now, but those that are around him. The men marveled at Jesus, and he says, and they say, "What sort of man is this that even the winds and the sea obey him?" I can imagine Jesus thinking, "What kind of man is this? The waves and the sea obey me? I've parted the seas twice. I've walked on water. When the world was being destroyed by water, I saved 8. I created this. So why do they listen to me? Because I'm the creator. I'm the one with authority." That's why he was able to be peaceful in tempest times, because he knew that he can control each and every aspect of it. Verses 28 through 34, and Luke 8 is a good reference for this, and also Mark chapter 5 gives a little bit of some different perspectives from that. But we have two men that are demon-possessed. One becomes the more of the focus here. But in Luke 8, it talks about that he did not live in a home. He lived among the tombs. And they tried to chain him and shackle him, and nothing could hold him. He was too powerful. They could not prevent him from roaming about in this, with this demon possession. But in verse 29, "And behold, they cried out, 'What have you to do with us, O Son of God?'" Even the demons recognize Jesus. Sometimes when we say that we know who Jesus is, that doesn't make us any better than the demons who recognize him. "Have you come here to torment us before the time?" They have some requests, and Jesus grants those that where they might be cast out. And in Matthew 8, it says in verse 32, "And he said to them, 'Go.'" Go. It's not a big thought out. Now there's more in Mark 5. He tells them there, go, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. But just these few words were what Jesus showed as his example of his authority of these demon-possessed men that nothing else had been able to contain. Mark 5 also tells us that Jesus later saw the man sitting in his right mind in contrast to what he had been before. The people, recognizing what Jesus do, are so afraid that instead of drawing close to him, they beg him to leave. And this man who had had the demon taken from him begs Jesus that he might be able to go with Jesus. But Jesus tells him, go home to your friends, tell them what I've done, and that the people marveled. So at the beginning we have someone who doesn't have a home. They've been living amongst the tombs. And at the end, Jesus telling them, go home and be an influence for good. And that he was, that everyone marveled at what had been done. So, going back, I skipped verses 18 through 22 for a reason. Not just because it's not talking about miracles, but because it's the section that I want to focus on a little bit more. We have a scribe and a disciple. We have a crowd around Jesus, like several of the other times. And the scribe says, teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. And Jesus responds, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Jesus obviously had that ability to see people's heart, to know what they were thinking, and also to know where they had been and what they needed. And so we have this scribe who wants to follow Jesus, and Jesus is telling him, you don't quite understand exactly what that means. You don't understand the cost of that. Foxes have holes, birds have nests, but I have nowhere to lay my head. The creator doesn't have what the creation has at this point. And then another disciple comes up to him, and he's talking. He says, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. And Jesus says to him, follow me, leave the dead to bury their own dead. So we have the scribe who wants to follow Jesus, and Jesus says, it's not exactly what you think. We have this disciple who doesn't have the proper priorities, and Jesus says, no, you need to change. You need to follow me. Let earthly things take care of earthly things. Come follow me and be more spiritual. Jesus understood their hearts. Jesus understands what they need. The leper, the centurion, Peter's mother-in-law, those who are possessed by demons, those who are in a boat on a stormy sea, Jesus understands it all. He marvels at the faith of some. He informs others in what can be quite stern manner in the way that he speaks to them and telling them that it's not exactly what they think. He tells the scribe one thing and the disciple another. He says to follow him because he needed help understanding what are the proper priorities. Throughout this section, Matthew 8, even though Jesus says the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head, we see several homes. The centurion said, I'm not worthy to have you in my house. They're in Peter's home. He sends the man who was possessed by a demon back to his home. And he's doing all this without having a place to lay his head of his own. Obviously, Jesus is not limited by many things the way that we are, but he wasn't limited by not having all these worldly things at his need to teach, to save, to heal others. This is the Jesus who entered town on a borrowed donkey. And yet, here he is with all the authority over people, over demons, over seas. And yet, he says, I have nowhere to lay my head. In chapter 9, when Jesus heals the paralytic, he tells him to rise up, pick up your bed, and go home. But yet he says that he has no way, place to lay his head. You may not have paid much attention to the first picture, or the picture on the first slide, and that's understandable. This is the album cover for a group that I really like, the Arcadian Wild. The album's called Welcome. You can see that at the bottom. Jokingly, I call the Arcadian Wild my evangelistic project because I talk to a lot of people about them, and right now my daughters are probably rolling their eyes because here I am speaking of them again. But I'm not bringing this up so that you will go download songs or listen to their albums, whatever it is. This is not the Arcadian Wild pitch. But they explain, one of the things I like about them is if you go to their concert, they explain better what the songs mean, their history, and what the lyrics mean. But they also explain what this album cover means. So in the picture, the two men who are at the closest part of the table are Lincoln and Isaac, and they've been in the band from the beginning. The lady standing, it's a little hard to see, but standing there on the right side is Bailey. And she's been with them for as long as I've been listening to them, but she hasn't been there the entire time. They've had other members of the group, and then they often sub in their bass player, which I actually don't see any of them in this picture, but I'm guessing they're probably there. The point is that this table is set for the people who've had a role in their life and made them who they are today. I'm guessing, knowing some of their songs, that their parents are probably in the picture. Possibly some of the members that were with them at the beginning, people who've helped them get off the ground, and they're very close with their manager who also sells their merchandise. They've dedicated a song to him. I'm guessing he's in there. Again, I don't see him. But the point is that they have brought in people who have made them who they are today. And this is them thanking those who have had that influence. But what you may not see is where it says welcome, that is actually the back of an empty chair. And that's the point of this album, that everyone is welcome and that people bring different things to the table that they might play roles in other people's lives. So that's why I bring this up, is because of the significance of the empty chair and that everyone is welcome and that they all bring different aspects to the table to play a role. Jesus welcomed a leper, someone who was unclean and would have to announce themselves so others could make way for them, but a leper who had faith came to him. A Roman centurion, which would not have been friend of the Jews, but Jesus marveled at his faith and that it was greater than those in Israel. Jesus fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah and he calmed a storm, was recognized by demons, all while not having a place to lay his head. Jesus had used what he had to love on those who, in their own mind, were not worthy for Jesus to come into their house. If we go back just a little bit before chapter 8, we have Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 through 27. Jesus says that those who hear and do the word are like a wise man who builds his house upon a rock. And those who hear the words but do not do them are like a foolish man who builds their house upon the sand. The one built on sand has a great fall when the storms come because they don't have that solid foundation to begin with. And the one who built on the rock does not fall when the storms come because it was founded on the rock, something that's more substantial and that has that good footing that you can build upon. John 14, verses 1 through 7, Jesus is talking and he says, "In my Father's house are many rooms. If you believe in God, believe also in me." And he speaks of a place that he's preparing for them, for us. While he may have described himself as not having a place to lay his head, he is preparing something better for us. It has many rooms, and he's preparing it for us. And he tells them, "I am the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father except through Jesus." Melvin read from 2 Corinthians chapter 5, and it describes as that we groan, longing for a heavenly dwelling, one not made with hands, that we might be further clothed and the mortal things might be swallowed up by life. God has prepared us for this very thing. We groan in this life because this is not what we were made for. We were made to take part in better things that have been prepared for us, and we've been prepared for them. Hebrews chapter 11, starting in verse 8. Hebrews 11, starting in verse 8. "By faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundation, whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven, and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore." And verse 16 says, "But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city." We should be looking forward to that living in heaven eternally, in the presence of God, in singing praises and worship, and enjoying what he has prepared for us, what he has done for us, so that we might be able to be there sharing in that communion with him. So let's think about what some of the ideas that were shared in Matthew 8. The leper says, "You can make me clean." We all need to be clean. We all need to be saved and healed. "Say the word, and my servant will be healed." "Save us, Lord, we are perishing." And in a different way, "What have you to do with us, O Son of God?" Someone so small and insignificant, what have you to do with us? Teacher, and even though he didn't quite understand what he was saying, teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. Jesus' response is, I will be clean. Go, let it be done for you as you have believed. Jesus described as taking our illnesses and bearing our diseases. And he gives us a great calm because of his authority, and we can have faith in what he can do. And Jesus says, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. He wants us to be clean. He wants us to be removed of those unclean spirits, those things that prevent us from being all that we can be for serving him. He wants us to fill those many rooms. It's prepared for us, and we've been prepared for it, so we long for that. May we have the faith of the leper, the centurion. May we recognize his authority and kneel before him with respect and honor. And may we long to be made clean by the only one that can clean us. Let's consider these things as we stand and sing.